It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
This is the Hockey News Podcast.
Welcome back to the Hockey News Podcast, presented by BetMGM McKinney Hockey. I am Mike Stevens. This is Ryan Kennedy. Ryan, you know, spring has sprung. There's warmth in the air. It's lovely. Mm-hmm. And playoffs are approaching. What a fun time to be a hockey fan, I gotta
say.
This is great. All right, so let's just hop right in. This has been a lot of hockey. And we were pretty hard on Daryl Sutter last week.
We were.
And I think, obviously, for hockey reasons, rightly so. Mm-hmm. But it's also very important, I think, for us to point out when anyone, like, to cover the both sides and point out when someone does good things. And Daryl Sutter, you know, it's been talked to death, certain NHLers boycotting Pride Night. Mm-hmm. Everyone's opinions of that are known. I personally am against it. Against people boycotting it, not against it. Yeah, so I want to make very clear. So the Calgary Flames, who have some incredible jerseys that they're going to be wearing during warm-ups. And you even commented on it on Twitter.
It's just a wildly great year for jerseys, particularly the one-off specialty ones.
Exactly. Yes. Just a great, great job they're doing there. And Daryl Sutter, because we live in the age of, media-trained answers just sort of like leaving everything up for interpretation and sort of covering your own butt, if you will. And Daryl Sutter straight up was like, we're going to be participating in it. In Pride Night, we're going to be wearing the jerseys and warm-ups. So we're going to have a lot of fun there. And it was also asked, would you welcome an openly queer, an openly gay person in your locker room? He said, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I think that's, especially at a time now where certain players are making their views against a certain group of people known. I think it's very important that we highlight the positives that come out of this, that we highlight when a coach who, look, a lot of people might have thought, just because he's an old traditionalist kind of guy, some people might have thought the opposite. Some people might have thought, maybe he'd say, I wouldn't want it to be a distraction for the team. No, he was very, very, I think that's extremely important and extremely, worthy of praise and sort of amplification now, given what has been going on lately.
Certainly, and, what it speaks to is, Daryl Sutter wants the best for his team. And mm-hmm. if you're on his team, then you're a part of it, no matter where you came from. And, in his talk, he was saying, like, look, when I was playing, we only had, like, one or two Swedes or, like, one or two Russians or, like, one or two BIPOC players in the league. And things have really changed now where, obviously, the league's more diverse than it used to be. And it's sort of trending, it's continuing to trend in that direction. But it's this idea of, like, same team. Like, if you're on the Calgary Flames, then you're one of us, and, we accept you, and we want you, pulling in the same direction because we have goals, and everybody is accepted. And I think that's really important. As you mentioned, Sutter's seen as, like, an old-school guy, but so is Brian Burke. And obviously we know that Brian Burke has been a huge advocate of all Pride activities over the years and has been a great ally for that community. So, it's not a political thing. We're talking about people's existence.
Yeah.
And I'm not really sure how that's political. And, it is heartening to see coaches, executives in the NHL say, look, like, we find value, whether it be a potential player or just fans, where if you're pulling for the Calgary Flames, then they accept you. And I think it is an important message, particularly somebody of Sutter's stature, who is a Stanley Cup winner.
Jack Adams last year.
Very well respected around the league. Mm-hmm. And it can certainly be divisive in his coaching style.
Yes.
But the fact that, his belief system is that strong, as you say, is very heartening to see.
Yeah. And I also think as well, Brian Burke has done some absolutely... done some incredible things for it. And, his late son, Brendan, did come out as gay during his lifetime. And I think that, when we hear a lot of this, we hear people being allies, we do hear I think a lot of that comes from, oh, well, you know, my best friend is gay, or I have a gay family member and I want them. And I don't know anything about you know, like the orientation of Sutter's family, but at least from where I'm looking at right now, like, he's just someone. It's important for any people who don't have personal ties to that community to still come out and still just advocate for their existence. Mm-hmm. I think that's extremely important. Like, you know, it's important for people who it's not about them, you know.
Right.
I'm advocating because my brother is gay and I want his. No, it's I'm advocating for this group of people because they deserve to be treated like human beings, you know?
Right.
And, you know, it has nothing to do with me, but I have a platform and I want to spread, you know, positivity and advocate for that. And I think that's, like we've said many times here, extremely heartening to see. And it's, you know, after the week of boycotting Pride nights and just terrible quotes and, you know, like people putting their foot in their mouths and stuff like that, I think it is just, like, to hear a quote like this from someone like Sutter, I think it's extremely, you know, it's just important, and it's like a breath of fresh air, and I hope it continues. All right, moving on to some hockey stuff. Pierre-Luc Dubois. Now, I haven't noticed necessarily the rumors hitting a fever pitch, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Elliot Friedman mentioned it, and that's what got people going.
Well, everyone knows that Pierre-Luc Dubois wants to be a Montreal Canadian.
Right.
It was apparent at the draft last year. We were there. We saw it. It's been apparent all through the season. It was apparent when he begrudgingly signed his qualifying offer in the offseason. So it seems like this is going to... It seems like this is almost like an Aaron Rodgers, New York Jets kind of thing, where it's just like, it's going to happen. We're just waiting, and both sides are kind of doing their last-ditch posturing here. You brought up a good point here. So let's pitch it. Let's make a trade. Let's say we're Kevin Cheveldayoff.
Yes.
First of all, we have to wait about 7 years to make a trade, because that's what he likes to do. But after those 7 years pass, then we're Kevin Cheveldayoff, we're ready to make a trade finally.
Yeah.
Let's pitch it. Why don't you go ahead and start?
Okay.
Let's do some role playing here, Ryan. I am Kent Hughes. I don't have to use a French Canadian accent, which is great.
Definitely.
So I'm Kent Hughes. Pretend I don't have any hair. Mm-hmm. And you be Kevin Cheveldayoff, and you pitch me, and then we will reverse, and I'll pitch you.
Okay, I love this. All right, so my pitch, because Pierre-Luc Dubois is a 24-year-old two-way center still under team control, mm-hmm. he has RFA arb rights this summer. So obviously this depends on when this trade goes down.
Let's say it's the draft, I'd say.
I feel
like that's probably when this will happen.
Sure. Yeah. Okay, so what I need is your 2024 first round pick, and if you want it top two protected, then I would need it to be conditional where it could be 2025 unprotected.
Yeah.
And Jordan Harris, the young defenseman, since you have so many young defensemen already, and I would love somebody that can move the puck on the back end to add to what I already have in Winnipeg, led by Josh Morrissey. So that is my initial pitch, is a 2024 first rounder and Jordan Harris.
Wow. Okay. Well, if we're doing this at the draft, and like you really want this player. Now, here's the thing. Winnipeg, we do have leverage because we can just keep him. So you're Montreal. You really want this guy. And if you really want to wait another year for him, go ahead. But that's another year that we're wasted away. Mm-hmm. So if I'm Kevin Cheveldayoff, I feel like I have some leverage here.
Yes.
And I go, like, we don't have to trade him to you. Like, right. If you really want him, go for it. Let's say we're doing this at the draft.
Okay.
I want Florida's first round pick.
Ah.
I want that right now.
Okay.
Give it to me.
Okay.
And then on top of that, and this is, keep in mind, this is Pierre-Luc Dubois. This is, you know, reliable, two-way forward. He's still young, still got team control, you know, like former third overall pick. This guy, you know, you put him in a good situation, he's money in the bank for 30 goals every year, you know, like close to point per game kind of guy. He can do this. I want Owen Beck as well.
Ooh.
I want Florida's first round pick that they gave you for Ben Chiarot. That's, if you're looking at this from, if I'm looking at it from your perspective.
Yes.
And keep in mind, that's an outlandish trade proposition.
Right.
So I'm coming at it from a perspective of, and this, keep in mind, this is not, I don't think they'll say yes to this.
Uh-huh.
But I'm Kevin Cheveldayoff, and I'm going, you don't have leverage. You really want this player.
Yeah.
We can just keep him. And then if you want to sign him for free next year, go ahead. But like, we're still going to have another year of this guy.
Mm-hmm.
Or we can trade him to someone else.
Yep.
Like, we can do that. I'm Kevin Cheveldayoff. I don't play by the rules, okay?
Right.
So I want the first round pick that Florida gave to you. That's an extra little asset that you have.
Yep.
There's a good chance that both of their picks might be top five, like, or top six or anything. Like, but I want that pick, and I want to own back.
Very intriguing.
And if you say no, then that's fine. Then you can continue to watch noted Winnipeg Jet Pierre-Luc Dubois tear it up on the ice while you guys try to rehabilitate Denis Gurianov or have Rem Pitlick down the middle or something, you know? But that's just where we're at.
There you go. I had one other thought.
Hit me.
It might be too wild, but I just wanted to throw it out.
There's
in the
nothing
universe.
Too wild here.
Yes. The trade is one for one.
Oh boy.
Pierre-Luc Dubois for Kirby Doc.
No, they're not giving up Kirby Doc. No. That is, first of all, they gave up a first round pick for him.
Yes, they did.
And a third.
But Pierre-Luc Dubois was traded for Patrick Laine.
No, that's absolutely true. But Patrick Laine, I think at this point in their careers, Patrick Laine is better than Kirby Dog. And I think that for Montreal, I think they're just like, they're so proud of themselves that they got Kirby Dog,
right,
that they were able to unlock him.
Yeah.
And like, on top of that, too, is that he's, like, he's, you know, cost-controlled for the next little bit.
He certainly is.
He's a young guy, and also he has a huge affinity for that organization for basically saving his career.
Right.
So I think they want to keep that guy. I don't think that they would give that
up. I just wanted to throw that out in the universe.
When I was thinking of this, I was looking down their cap-friendly page this morning, and I went, like, like, who are, like, good young assets they have, maybe?
Yeah.
And I'm like, Kirby Doc, and I go, no, there's no way. But you never know. All right. I feel like this time of the year is maybe your favorite time because it's NCAA signing season.
Yes.
And you're someone who follows that like crazy.
Yeah.
You love it. And so there've been a ton of players that have signed lately, you know, like even more recently Matt Coronato and Sean Farrell. Mm-hmm. Matt Coronato in Calgary, Sean Farrell in Montreal.
Yeah.
Now when it comes to, you know, NHL players or NCAA players, sorry, signing NHL deals, you know, there's not a ton of runway left in the season, but we can see where they go. Who do you think is going to make an impact coming right out the gate here with these deals?
So we'll talk a little bit about those two guys first.
Yes, let's do that.
And then I have my secret weapon that I'm going to unleash.
Okay.
Even though I wrote the question in the first place. So Matt Coronato, very interesting because he's always been a very strong player.
Like, yes.
Physically strong. A great career at Harvard, put up a lot of numbers. And, you know, going to Calgary, and again, going back to what Daryl Sutter had said the other day, is, you know, Coronato played some center at Harvard, but he was drafted as a winger, and at the NHL level, is probably a winger.
Mm-hmm.
I like that because, again, you know, when you're playing on the wing, it's less responsibility, and, you know, Coronado's a responsible player, but you're making a huge jump from the NCAA to the NHL.
Mm-hmm.
So I like the idea of him being kind of a complimentary, like almost like a Zach Hyman type player early on in his career. And, you know, Calgary, I mean, they're fighting for their lives now, so I'm not sure how many games Coronado's got to get in because you really can't be training him on the fly.
No.
If things go completely sideways for the Flames, then you probably see him the last couple of games of the year where it's like, all right, let's just get
things
are
done.
Reps.
Yeah.
Sean Farrell's interesting in Montreal, smaller guy, but super smart, great offensive instincts, again, put up huge numbers at Harvard, and, again, this is a player that I think will probably fit in your, like, it seems like he's destined to be like a second liner, a guy that can put pucks in good places and get production. And again, right now in Montreal, like, anything goes. Because out of it, you know, Marty St. Louis is evaluating players. He's helping, you know, bring them along. You know, Raphael Harvey-Pinard had a hat trick the other day. You know, good for him. And as we say, Kirby Doc having a great season. And this is the time where you can kind of play in the sandbox because the stakes could not be lower. So for Sean Farrell, it's like, go in there. Let's see what you can do. Heck, maybe we'll even toss you on the second power play unit.
Why not?
Why not?
Yeah.
Let's just see what sticks. Which leads me to the final player, Tyler Cleven.
Oh, yeah.
Recently signed by the Ottawa Senators. Yep. You know, they drafted him out of the University of North Dakota, which is where about half of the Ottawa Senators have come from.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. He has played with, like, Jake Sanderson and, you know, Shane Pinto, Jacob Bernard Docker was there. It's hilarious, but it also, it's like, well, if you're going to draft from any program,
why not?
Nodak's a pretty good one.
So
you can't really fault them there. But Tyler Cleven's fascinating because we don't see a lot of defensemen like him anymore. Just a hard-hitting, like, tough dude to play against. And yeah, you know, he brought some offense to his game, but I see him more as that stopper, that guy that Sens fans are going to love because he's just going to, like, cartwheel someone with a hip check. And I don't think there will be much of an adjustment in that regard because, you know, he's, like, 6'3", and, like, I don't know if he's, like, 210 pounds or 214, but I'm, like, he's a big dude. And, he, you know, he's had a couple of years in college where he's playing against older guys. So, yeah, there's going to be a bit of an NHL adjustment, but I don't think it's going to be too bad in terms of the physicality. I think he can be a real boon for the Senators in that regard and, you know, continue to bring another weapon to a blue line core that has exciting pieces. Obviously, you know, Chychrun and Thomas Chabot are the headliners, but Jake Sanderson's having a very nice rookie season. And then, you know, you toss in Tyler Cleven, where third pairing guy, you know, can kind of change the momentum with one of his shifts. I think it's going to be really fun just to see what he can do down the stretch.
Yeah, and one thing about Montreal and Montreal and Ottawa here too is that injuries have really ravaged them lately. You know, so there's a lot of space for these guys to run. Like, you know, like you just mentioned Chychrun. Like, Chychrun's injured now. He's likely going to miss the rest of the season.
So
Tyler Cleven really wants to. If they really want to just be like, hey man, let's see what this kid can do. Let's throw him out in the top six. Let's see, or top four. Sorry. Let's see. You know, if he can run with the Bulls, if they will.
Yeah.
And then on top of that too, like. You got Sean Farrell coming in here, and it's like, yeah, well, you know, like Cole Caulfield is injured, and you know, Mike Hoffman's serving a 2-game suspension, and just everyone, like everyone is hurt on that team. Maybe give him a shot. There's a lot of you know, studio space to run with. One that I'm really excited for. I'm not sure if he'll get games, but I think he should because they're basically done at this point. It's Devon Levi, and we mentioned him a ton. But like, this is a guy who, I mean, you mentioned it last episode where. You know, like sometimes what will help with these sort of these goalies going on crazy runs to start is that no one has the book on them.
Yeah.
Like no one really knows. And I think, and obviously it's not going to help for a playoff push or anything, but Devon Levi, a guy who probably has to have the most confidence of ever at this point. I mean, he's going to win the Richter Award likely. He's, you know, he's one of the most dominant goalies in college hockey we've seen in a very long time. Incredible statistics all across the board. And yes, he's, you know, maybe 2 inches shorter than you would like him to be. But I mean, like Buffalo, outside of, you know, the outside of 42, 43-year-old Craig Anderson at this point, like they Ukko Pekka-Luukkonen has had an up and down, you know, interesting year.
Yeah,
like he's been fine, but you know, he's an 893, I believe, right now. You know, that's a good building spot for him. We've seen him be good in stretches, but overall statistically hasn't been great. So why not give Devon Levi, you know, like 3, 4, 5 starts down the stretch, see what he can do against, you know, like the best shooters in the world, and I'm really excited to see what he can do. And then he hasn't signed yet, but like obviously Matthew Nyes. Like he will have, I believe, if they like, so when they
they're in the Minnesota's in the Frozen Four, so yeah,
you'll so he still
be
has
able
some
see
time.
Him until
April like, 9th, I believe it is.
Yeah, I mean, if Minnesota loses in the semifinal, and I would give it even odds because it's a pretty good Frozen Four this year. I think anything can happen, but yeah, April 6th is the semifinal. So hypothetically, April 7th would be the earliest.
I believe. Best case scenario, or I think, no, I believe, like, regardless of anything, he'll have a maximum of 3 games, 3 regular season games. But even those 3 games, like there's a good chance that he factors into the playoff lineup.
I
do think. So that would be very interesting to see. Another thing real quick before we move on to anything else is that the Toronto Six won the Isabel Cup.
That's right.
You know, incredible game.
Yeah.
Goes on.
Fantastic winning goal too.
Fantastic winning goal. OT winner. What a likable, amazing team. I just want to give a shout out to all of the played at Mullet Arena. A lot of fun. I just want to give a shout out to all the players, you know, all the staff, management. You know, even what was great is that real quick story to tell is that their social media guy is a guy named Richard Coffey, and he's a he's a really passionate guy and. I have a soft spot for stories like this because it happened to me too. Where basically he was looking for jobs, looking around. It just didn't seem like there was a space in the industry for him. I remember him reaching out to me and stuff, and just basically being like, "I know you went through this, you know, like, you know, is there any way to sort of get through it?" And I say like, "It's tough. You just gotta just keep grinding." And I know that's the tough thing to say. He looked like he was basically out, and then He gets hired by the Toronto Six to be their social manager, and he did a phenomenal job on social media all the way to the Isabel Cup.
There you go.
And was able, and so he starts the season thinking, oh man, you know, I don't think sports media has a spot for me. And by the end of it, he's holding the Isabel Cup, tweeting about it. I think that's great. Love stories like that. Congratulations to the Toronto Six. What an amazing ride. All right, the Flyers.
Yes.
They're the hot topic, hot commodity when it comes to sort of like talking points lately. Mm-hmm. Things are changing. There's dysfunction everywhere. But they did see a great run by Tyson Forster, one of their best prospects. He had 7 points in 8 games. They sent him back to the AHL, but this does seem, and they just signed Emil Andre as well, this does seem to hint towards maybe some brighter skies ahead. Have the vibes for next year. This year's a lost cause. Have the vibes for next year improved?
I feel like they have, because you're starting to see those young players really sort of get that confidence. And, you know, Tyson Forster has always been an awesome shooter. You know, great goal scorer in junior hockey. And then got some sort of, we'll call it bonus AHL experience when the OHL canceled its season during the pandemic. But for him to do it at the NHL level, even if it's a small sample size, is very good to see. You know, Noah Cates has been playing well. I mean, Noah Cates pretty much always plays well, because that's kind of his MO, is like great motor, like does everything right. You know, Owen Tippett's having a good year. And those are the young guys you want to see just, you know, getting confidence, building their game, heading into next season. And then, Emil Andre coming over from Sweden for the rest of the season at the AHL level. And, you know, he'll be with the Flyers next year. Like, I don't even have any question about that. He was amazing at the Summer World Juniors. I was there in Edmonton and Sweden. It was basically Emil Andre and Jesper Wallstedt.
Yeah.
Like, they were the guys that showed up. You know, Sweden, it was a very up and down tournament, but Andre was incredible and Wallstedt was obviously amazing in net. But this, you know, this is a kid that I think Flyers fans are going to love him, because he's really competitive. He's not big, but he'll throw the body.
Yes.
I think he's only 5'9", but you know, he's pretty sturdy.
Mm-hmm.
And he can contribute at both ends of the ice. So that's great. And you know, you look at the Lehigh Valley Phantoms, their AHL affiliate right now.
You got Bobby Brink down there.
Got Bobby Brink. Yep. I love Bobby Brink. I think they're 5th or 6th in the conference, so they're not guaranteed a playoff spot, but they're pretty much, they should be there. And so you get more experience. You hope that they can go a round or two, and those players can get a little more experience, and that helps them, you know, go into a good summer and then have a good camp. And then you reset. Hopefully some of your veterans are a little more healthy, and you see what you can do.
I'm looking at the Lehigh Valley Phantoms roster as well, and I completely forgot that Artem Anisimov is on them.
Wow. Right now.
And Adam Brooks, legend. Anyway, sorry, the total. Yeah, I think that there's a lot of positives going forward with the Flyers. I think the emergence of Owen Tippett is huge, not just because that's a great young player that you have. He's got an incredible shot. He's someone who you can basically plant on your top power play unit for the next, like, 5-6 years and be happy with it, but also that he was a central part of the return for, I would say, the closest thing you have to a franchise icon in the modern era. Like, you were really bent over a barrel in that Claude Giroux trade, and you were able to get a guy who will hopefully, by the look of it this year, 20-goal season on a terrible team, factor into your team for a lot moving forward. Everything that you mentioned is really going really sort of helping them, but it really is difficult for me to be sort of optimistic on the Flyers with a lot of the contracts that they have.
Sure, fair enough.
I'm like, it's tough for me to be optimistic when you have a blue line that is anchored by Rasmus Ristolainen and by Tony D'Angelo. And then on top of that, like, Travis Sanheim, great player, but you just signed him to a huge, you know, extension that maybe he's not super worth at this point, and he just, like, And then the piece de resistance is, I just do not trust John Tortorella to be the coach for this team. Like, I just don't.
Really? See, at this point, I think you're still in that Tortorella era where he's a very effective coach.
Is he? I don't think a lot of players are having fun. Like, I really, like, I don't think that, I feel like he's already worn out his welcome. I feel like we've seen a lot of sort of, like, bubbling unrest there. I think that the fact that Tortorella was such a like Chuck Fletcher guy, and then they unceremoniously let Chuck Fletcher go, which was the best move they could have made. That is something. Right. That, if Chuck Fletcher was there, it would have been a resounding no. I don't think that the vibes have returned.
Yeah.
But on top of that, you do have he was a Chuck Fletcher guy, and then the report is that Dave Scott, who just retired, he's CEO of Comcast, was the one to let Fletcher go while the old guard, you know, the old advisors there were not told that, or like they didn't have a factor in that. And Tortorella was a Fletcher guy. He defended him.
Right.
So I feel like Tortorella's probably miffed about it. There's just like a lot of things that make me feel like there's not a ton of sort of synergy within that front office. And then you look at some of the contracts they have, and I just don't know. I think they have some good young players. I think they'll come up, but I don't trust John Tortorella to play the young players in a way that will help them be as good as they can. And I really don't trust management at this point to continue building, you know, a team that, or to reverse course on the fact that they've built a pretty bad team going forward. And, you know, like put some in, even like Danny Briere, he's in there, but apparently he's not well liked by those, at least these are reports that I've heard, he's not super well liked by those old school advisors.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder how much that will get in the way of him trying to do his job, or whether he even sticks around. We don't know. Just a lot going on there. I don't have a ton of optimism when it comes to the Philadelphia Flyers. But to be fair, like you said, they have some great young players that are coming up who have managed to succeed in some very, very difficult circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if those trajectories continue along like they have, it will at least be a better season than this. That's
yes,
for sure.
Yes.
So I think so if you really want to say it compared to this season, I think the vibes have improved a bit.
Yeah.
But then you expand that comparison, and I think the vibes are still pretty rough in Philly. But we'll have to see. Sorry to be the downer.
I apologize. No problem.
But you know what? I'm going to speak my truth.
You should.
I will. And then finally, look, we've talked about the wild card. We've talked about these races. They're still surging on. We have Vegas. We have LA. We have Edmonton. They've all been on heaters lately.
Yeah.
One team that I have not mentioned there is Winnipeg, because they have not been on a heater lately. And we said that last episode as well. But who comes out of the Pacific playoff bracket? Because it's been crazy, crazy tight, and things seem to be shifting every day.
Yeah, like Vegas, Los Angeles, and Edmonton are all red hot right now.
Yeah.
And you know, watching these teams just in the past week, it's like, wow. Like, I mean, Vegas and Edmonton played each other, and that was great.
Mm-hmm.
And then Los Angeles, I mean, they really snuffed out Winnipeg.
Yes.
On the weekend. And, you know, you look at that Kings team, and they have so many good elements, and they have so much experience. You know, the goaltending, obviously, with Jonas Korpisalo coming in, is better than what they had before.
Yeah.
At least it's just a better fit.
It's better than that, but then Vegas and Jonathan Quick is going to spite his way into the playoffs.
Totally, like, and sometimes it is just a matter of, you know, a different scenario.
Yeah.
And hey, if Jonathan Quick ticks off revenge on his motivation ballot, that's fine by me. I love Surly Jonathan Quick. It's the best kind of Jonathan Quick.
He's 5-1.
Yeah.
Incredible.
Yeah. So, and then you look at Edmonton, and it's like, man, like McDavid and Dreisaitl,
and then
you know, like, yeah, the moves they made at the deadline, you know, Ken Holland, like, went out and got what they needed. And, you know, I watch that team, it's like, I mean, if Stuart Skinner's, like, good enough, then, I mean, you know, they went to the conference final last year. So it's a really tough choice right now, but something about Los Angeles right now is just really fascinating to me. There's something about this Kings team that's just like the right mix of like youth and experience that I feel that they're like sneaky dangerous.
I'm just shocked that Quick trade didn't nuke their room. Like I thought that was going to be something that went in there and they go on, they do what the Flames did after the Sutter Peltier thing, where it just clearly, like, that was the straw that sort of broke stuff. But that's a resilient room. They really like each other. And this, these are all phenomenal hockey teams.
Yeah.
I think, and I keep saying it every episode, but I'm just, like, over the moon that Ken Holland did what he needed to do to get a good team around McDavid by getting Matthias Ekholm. He's been everything they could have hoped for. He has stabilized that blue line, improved everyone around him. Like Evan Bouchard's looking like a legitimate top four guy now.
Mm-hmm.
That's great. And then you've taken that sort of defensive burden off of that dynamic duo of McDavid and Draisaitl, and they are just playing incredible now and able to just cook. Like, let them cook,
totally. You know?
I think Winnipeg is in a playoff spot right now, sort of like they're hanging on, I think, well, to that second
round
card.
They're also the Central, though.
Oh, sorry, yes. Yeah. But like this Pacific division is phenomenal, and I don't know, man. Like, it's I wish everyone could make it. You know?
I was gonna say the funny thing is like one of those three teams is gonna be out in the first round because they're gonna have to play each other.
Yeah, I just like. Man, I look at this division and I go, like, all three of these teams are awesome. Yeah. I love how all three of these teams are built. Mm-hmm. I love that Edmonton has these two superstars who are going to finally be playing meaningful hockey and continue to be playing meaningful hockey. Mm-hmm. I love that LA is this, like, just super fun mix of, like, high-end young talent and, like, established, like, solid, steady veteran talent.
Yeah.
And then I love how Vegas was just like, we're going to spend a lot of money.
That's right.
We are going to try and buy our way, and so far we have done that. And then, you know, like, let's get every big name on our team, you know, for a couple of years. They got Jonathan Quick at the deadline, and it's worked.
Yeah.
You know, and then they still have Logan Thompson just waiting in the wings. Like, he came back. He was hurt for like 2 months, came back, got hurt again, but we'll see what happens in the playoffs. Mm. I love all three of these teams. I wish there was a way where all of them could you know, make it to the second round, but unfortunately sports is not about everyone having fun.
It's true. And it's funny because, like, you look at it and it's like, yeah, I could see all three of these teams winning the Stanley Cup at this point.
Yeah, I don't know about the Kings. I don't think they have the high end talent to make it there yet. But yeah. I think when Quentin Byfield really takes that next step, because mm-hmm. he's starting to look very good. And when he eventually takes that next step to be like a genuine every night impact player, when the Durzies and the Mikey Andersons and everyone just sort of keeps taking those steps forward, I think they'll be dangerous. I don't think they have it this year.
But the thing that's funny is they're not like, they might not be like the explosive talents of McDavid and Draisaitl, but then like you look at like Kopitar and Doughty and Philip Deneau, and it's like, those are playoff guys. And that's what's so fascinating about this division is what happens if the Kings play the Oilers in the first round
again,
yeah. And you have this like high octane offense versus this like burly, like experienced team, and the goaltending is probably a wash at this point. That's what's sort of fascinating. And then, of course, with Vegas, as you mentioned, all those like great weapons, and then all that motivation. Whether it's Jonathan Quick or Jack Eichel, for that matter.
Yeah.
Well, Jack Eichel, first playoffs ever.
I was going to say, like, he's basically guaranteed to be playing his first playoff game of his career. And we're, 8 years into the Jack Eichel experience? Like, it's remarkable and crazy to see. You know, I did forget that LA has a secret weapon. They have Trevor Moore. And from Thousand Oaks. They have my boy. And I think that means that they are, in my eyes, the Stanley Cup favorite. All right, Ryan. It's your turn for rapid fire this week.
All right.
I am ready. I've been preparing. Hit me with your best shot.
Excellent. No Pat Benatar questions.
Okay.
First one, I know I haven't seen the first episode of the new season, which is fine, but who's your favorite character on Succession?
Oh, man. Like, they're so... First of all...
They're all great.
They're all great characters. They're all terrible people.
Totally.
Oh, but, it's funny. My dad refuses to watch Succession because he's like, I hate everyone on that show.
Right.
I showed him the first episode, and I think after the baseball scene, he's like, I hate it. Screw these people. I hate it. If their helicopter went down in the first episode and that was just it, he'd be like, I'd be the happiest man on the earth.
Right.
My favorite character... I mean, look, it's easy to say Greg. I mean, he's the, like... If so it is said, so it must be, you know, like, incredible. But I gotta go Tom. I love me some Tom Wobbskins. I love his progression as like the sort of like bumbling suck up, like, oh, I'm Tom, you know, to like almost like this, and again, I haven't seen the first episode yet, but like this sort of calculated like guy who really, you know, fell on his, like, or appear was ready to fall on his sword, and that just sort of seemed to make him look really good in the eyes of that. I love Carl. Carl's my favorite character.
Nice.
The scene where they're locked in the hotel in like, was it like Turkey or is that, and they're asking, he's like, I am actually having a panic attack right now? That's my that's some of the best line delivery ever. Yeah. I love Carl. He's great. So nice. Yeah.
I'm going with Roman.
I mean, of course.
Yeah, because I mean, he has the best lines.
It's like saying your favorite Batman villain is the Joker. Like, come
right.
on, man.
It's but, the But it's I gotta be true to me.
Yeah, no, I
mean,
that's
the thing I love about Roman is, because you're right, there's nobody to root for on the show. But to me, that's sort of like the point, which is why it's so much
yes.
fun, because yeah. no matter what happens, you can't really be too disappointed. But the best thing about Roman is that there was times where you're like, maybe he could be the good guy, and
yeah.
then he'll just do something despicable,
oh, yeah.
and you're like, nah, he blew it again. And I love that dynamic. Where he'll just make sure that you can't root for him at least like 5 or 6 times.
They're kind of all like that though. Like they're all moments where you think that each character is starting to learn their lesson, is starting to do something good, and then they will make the worst possible decision they
yes.
can in that moment and go like, oh, you're right, all these people are terrible.
Yeah. yeah. I feel Kendall might be the outlier there where it's like, at no point did I think he was going to be the good guy.
That's true. Also, shout out to Jess, Kendall's assistant.
Right.
I think that she is like the only pure innocent character in the entire show, because all she does is just go like, yes, okay, sure. Like,
right.
that, you know, she doesn't have any... She hasn't been written to have like her own agency really in the show,
yeah.
but like she's just seems like just a very good employee who
right.
hasn't done anything totally despicable yet.
Right.
So good for Jess, but I gotta go Carl.
Fair
yeah.
enough. All right. Next question.
Mm-hmm.
What is your favorite? I'll just call it YouTube like show.
Oh, this is good. Mm. Caravan of Garbage from Mr. Sunday Movies. I'm not sure. Do you know who Mr. Sunday Movies is?
No, I do not.
Okay, so it's these... I'm not sure even if Connor does. He gave me... Okay, cool. So these two Australian dudes, it's funny. They started this podcast called The Weekly Planet. It's a spoof on The Daily Planet from Superman. But like because they were super excited for Batman vs. Superman to come out. And it's funny because if you listen to those episodes, this is from like 2013, so I started listening in like high school really at this. They're all super, you know, they're all super positive and they're like, you know, they started it when they were, I'd say probably like 30 or so. Now they're like older dudes at this point.
Right.
But they were all like really, really upbeat and then the movie came out and it was bad.
Right.
And everything from there has sort of been cynical at this point. Like they're all just kind of sick of it. But anyway, Caravan of Garbage is a series on the YouTube channel where they basically just look at any type of movie series, but they go like really in depth on it, and they're just like their style of comedy is really funny. You never see them; it's just like a very good edit, like it's sort of like a voiceover, but there's just always footage and cool fun stuff there. They do trivia, they do all that, and the fact they're Australian, their voices are just very funny the
right.
way they say stuff. So I just love it. Caravan of Garbage, check it out. Mr. Sunday Movies, it's great. Yeah, and also That's Cringe, Cody Co. They don't do them anymore, but
good.
those were very funny.
Nice. So I don't spend a lot of time on YouTube because I am an old.
Yes.
But the one that I really do like is Chicken Shop Date.
Yes.
Yes.
Phenomenal.
Yeah, exactly. For those
when she
who
asked
don't...
Jack Harlow if he knew how to read, incredible. I love that.
Yeah, we actually just watched one where she had Shania Twain on.
Oh yeah.
And that was pretty great. But yeah, the fact that it's like. The fact that 90% of her guests were like UK grime artists
yes.
that I don't know, it was kind of fun. Like, I kind of wish she would interview like Dizzy Rascal, because then I would have like at least sort of a semblance or like The Streets. Actually, she did The Streets, but it was over Zoom and it wasn't as
yeah,
good.
Yeah. Same with Hot Ones. Like, it just wasn't as good over Zoom.
Yeah. yeah but yeah, shout out to Chicken Shop Date.
Mm-hmm.
Never fails to satisfy.
Yeah.
I love it. And I hope that one day she has Drake on, because that's her mission in life.
I think her mission in life now, too, is to have Andrew Garfield on. Have you seen that? Have you seen their
I
interactions?
I saw that was
yeah, I think
pretty good.
She's got to have Andrew Garfield on. I think
there
that's, yeah. Anyway.
Excellent.
Yeah.
All right, next one. Quick quiz time.
Okay.
Going back to hardcore, just for fun.
Oh, boy.
I like to make you squirm.
I'm
going to
be terrible at this.
I'm going to give you three options. Mm-hmm. You tell me which was not an actual subgenre of hardcore.
Okay.
Okay. One, emo violence.
Okay.
Two, crust punk. Three, vegan core.
I'm going to go emo violence was not it.
You are incorrect.
Really? So
yes.
violence was a type, okay.
Okay, because power violence was an offshoot of grindcore featuring a lot of West Coast bands. And then emo violence was kind of a jokey reference to that, which was more like Florida and I would say, I guess, like skinnier guys, playing similarly, you know, crazy, fast, grindy stuff. So emo violence, you know, bands like Palatka, Inhumanity from South Carolina, which is one of my favorites, and so on and so on. So there you go. You were wrong on that one. Final question. If you were the dictator of a small island nation, and you could have one decree that would make everyone just sort of stay on their toes like, this guy is nuts, what would it be? And I don't want anything like dark, like murdering a certain group of people, but just something that, well, I'm putting it out.
Who do you think I am?
Well, based on the question of being a dictator.
Okay.
But just something you would decree just to keep everyone on their toes, what would it be?
So I've long said this, that if I were ever to run for public office, and keep in mind, like, I have a political science degree, you know, American constitutional studies, but if I were ever to run for office, I would not present any policy plans for, like, budgetary stuff, like, anything. My only policy platform would be you get one free legal punch per year. You're allowed to punch one person in the face. If you punch two, like, there are severe penalties for
right.
that. Like it, like so, like it, but you. So that means you have to choose your punch very carefully.
Yes.
Like if you impulse it one day, you cannot touch another person
right.
for the rest of the year. And if you do, you're gonna be harsh stuff. But you get one free legal punch per year. I think that is my, because just think about it. Like I think a lot of unrest is born from passive aggression.
Uh-huh.
And I think it's almost like a less violent method of the purge.
I was going to say, it's the gentlest purge.
It's the gentlest purge, where I think it just gives someone a chance to get something out of their system and go like, all right, we've,
cool.
like, because also the person who gets punched knows like, wow, I must have really messed up for them to spend their one punch on me.
Right.
Like this is their break, you know, break glass in case of emergency. This is their, like, you know, nuclear bomb.
Mm-hmm.
And they like, wow, I really got to change my ways.
Yeah.
You know, or let's say two like long, you know, long time friends that were just, you know, like they had this terrible disagreement that one day one of them punches them. They go, I mean that much to you that you spent your punch on me? Thank you. And also, like, I think you feel better. I now know the gravity of my actions. I think that would help society.
Gotcha. Excellent. So mine would be that if I was running, and I think it's important it's an island nation because you can kind of control the biodiversity.
Yes.
All dogs must be as close to wolves as possible. I don't like the idea of the fact that humans have bred dogs for certain traits over the centuries. So as much as, like, bulldogs are cute and everything, they are completely unnatural. So, like, no chihuahuas, no poodles, no bulldogs. Like, huskies, I guess, like, you know, German shepherds are probably fine.
What about golden retrievers? Are they fine?
Golden retrievers, yeah.
Labs?
Yeah.
Bernese mountain dogs, like those?
I can't remember what a Burmese mountain dog looks like.
It's a majestic, beautiful dog.
Okay, but how close is it to a wolf?
It looks pretty. It looks almost kind of like a bear more than anything.
Okay, well, that's probably okay.
Then. Yeah.
Yeah. But I don't want to. Yeah, like no dachshunds.
Yeah, no, like, what are they called? Trendy dogs, they call
them? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, nothing teacup.
Now, I feel like there are some dire implications with this because I feel like people, like, this is something that you just agreed, which means that, or decreed, which means that people might already have those dogs. Do you then wipe those dogs out?
No, I'd grandfather them.
Grandfather, oh.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, in the words of Bob Barker, have your pets spayed or neutered.
Okay, thank the Lord.
And just to wrap things up, the fake subgenre was vegan core.
I thought it was gonna be, okay, well, I thought.
You can be vegan and hardcore, it's very common, but that's not your entire identity.
Well,
I should at least say, nobody formed a band and referred to themselves as vegan cults.
Have you ever watched Scott Pilgrim vs. the World?
I certainly have.
Yeah, so X number three, I immediately thought that was based on real events. And
right,
so,
right.
there, but I'm wrong.
Well, I mean, it is.
Yeah.
But no, that was not known. Like, if you looked up vegan core, like.
There's nothing really there.
Not that I remember.
404 page not found,
exactly.
Basically. All right. Well, on that note, as Bob Barker said, get your pets spayed and neutered. And we will be back next week with more lovely hockey content and also just crazy questions that we ask each other, because that's always, in my opinion, the most fun part of the show. Use BetMGM for all your betting needs, McKennie Hockey, and if you want to listen to past episodes of this podcast or any other of the lovely Hockey News podcasts, go to thehockeynews.com/podcast or find them all on their own feeds on every podcast you can find.